Good morning, everybody. My name is Robert Lamb. I am the director of the program on crisis, conflict, and cooperation here at CSIS. Welcome, and thank you for coming out on this beautiful, sunny spring day to talk about the Casamance. I am pleased to have up here with me some very distinguished speakers who will update us on the situation in the Casamance, an area that is obviously being a bit overshadowed by events happening in its eastern neighbor in Mali, and by other events throughout Africa and, well, throughout the area that people call the arc of instability, which is a terrible term. To my immediate left, we have Ambassador Jim Bullington, who is the State Department's Bureau of Conflict and Stabilization Operations Casamance advisor, based in Senegal. He's here for a few weeks, and we are very pleased to be able to have him here to talk about where the peace process is today and where it might be going. To his left, we have Rebecca Wall, who is the CSO Bureau's Africa Operations Officer. Colonel Kebe, who is from the Embassy of Senegal here in Washington, and I believe it's his second day at work, having just been posted to Washington. And I'd also like to welcome Ambassador Patricia Haslack, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary at the Bureau of CSO, for being here today and for helping to coordinate this event. Welcome. If you could please turn off your cell phones during this event, that would be great. You're also anybody sitting against the wall is welcome to come up to the table. There's a few free seats as well. How should we start? Would you like? Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. That is my second day in the United States. I just arrived, so I was not, ready for this presentation. But that is really a big pleasure for me and an honor to be with you. You will recognize also that maybe my English is not so good as it should be, but I try to express myself and to make me understand. That is my pleasure to be sharing with you some ideas about the situation in Casamance, one of the regions of Senegal were torn by a 30-year conflict which broke out in December 26, 1982. The Casamance conflict is one of the oldest in the African continent, but remains a low-intensity conflict. Because the Senegalese armed forces master the situation in the field, the rebellion has never registered a territorial gain, even if the movement of democratic forces of the Casamance seizes the opportunity of the conflict to intensify some illegal activities. And to give a better understanding of the situation, I would like to present a brief genesis through the following outline. I will speak of a quick physical portrait of the region. We will deal also with the threats and characteristics of the conflict in Casamance. Then how the conflict is managed, the main concerns and prospects. That are the different points that I want to elaborate with you. Physical portrait. The Casamance region is located southwest of Senegal. I have a PowerPoint presentation, but I think there was no coordination, but no problem. The Casamance region is located southwest of Senegal between the Gambia and Bissau, Guinea. We have 28,350 quadrat kilometers. Casamance is as big as Belgium. Despite its modest size, the Casamance is undoubtedly the most beautiful region of Senegal and one of the most beautiful in all of Africa. The natural region of Casamance is limited by Gambia in the north, Bissau, Guinea, and Guinea in the south. It is divided in two military zones. The military zone number 5 covers the region of Ziguinchor, mostly inhabited by the Djola people. The military zone number 6 is composed of two regions, Kolda and Sedju, in which the Djola ethnic group is a minority. Most of the population now are not in favor of the movement of the democratic forces of the Casamance. And they cooperate with the military in terms of alert and intelligence. As I said earlier, the two military zones are bordered in the north by the Republic of Gambia and in the south by the Republic of Bissau, Guinea. I note that because, you know, the geopolitics finds here its real significance, inasmuch as the vicissitude of the political life of these two neighboring countries and their vulnerabilities have consequences on the stability of the region. I can give only one example. Now, end of 1980s and early 90s, Senegal had problem with all the neighboring countries, with Mauritania in the north, because Mauritania was saying Senegal was supporting the FLAM. FLAM is an organization of black people who are fighting for more consideration and the end of slavery. Gambia, that was the end of the confederation. Because there was a confederation, the power, legal power was overthrown by a coup d'etat. And the regime was restored by the Senegalese armed forces. But in 1989, it was there was an end to this confederation. In Bissau, Guinea, also, there was a difference. We had a problem, a border problem, because there was a petrol offshore in Casamance. And we had with Guinea-Bissau a problem of border, but the International Court of Justice gives the right to Senegal. But all these, at the same time, that was in 1989, all these three countries used to utilize, I mean, to instrumentalize the movement of democratic force of Casamance to have pressure upon Senegal. That's why if you, for those people who follow the situation, 1990 was a turning point in this conflict, because during this time we noticed some change in the armaments. The rebels acquire new arms and something like that. That means that the neighboring countries are playing very important role in the conflict. And for the peace process also, I think something is to be done with these neighboring countries. The geopolitical situation is an indicator of different threats for the region. What about the threats? I can mention the movement of democratic forces of Casamance. Born in 1982, the movement of democratic forces of Casamance, MFDC, is the only separatist movement in the southern part of Senegal. It relies mainly on the Diola ethnic group. Its armed wing was formed in 1985 and is called Atika. Atika means warrior. Its leader, as many of you know already, was Father Augustin Djamakoun Senghor, who died in 2007. He signed a peace agreement with the government of Senegalese President Abdoulaye Wade in 2004. However, several factions of the MFDC refused to participate in the peace deal and continued their fighting. This division has deeply divided Casamance's independence movement. So we have different leaders. You have heard about Kouruma Sané, who's in Europe, Biagi, who's in Senegal, and two other leaders, the political wings. For the military wings also, we have almost four branches. You know, Salif Sadio, the faction of Salif Sadio, the faction of César Atout Badiate, and some are just in the border with Gambia, others are in the border, are acting from the border in the south with Bissau Guinea. The death of Father Senghor, Father Djamakoun, make reaching a permanent peace deal in Casamance much more difficult. The Senegalese government tries to find a new head of the rebellion and separatist movement to negotiate with in Father Djamakoun's place. However, this is not easy, as the separatist movement has splintered into rival factions since the 2004 peace agreement. Violence has also increased since then. Among the threat, we note also illegal activities of the, what I call illegal activities of the movement of the MFDC. Organized in groups of variable size, the MFDC has developed economic means of survival based on smuggling, wood and drug, looting, hijacking, violence, robbery, killing, intimidation, but also mining of pathways and roads. That is a very big problem, you know, for the population, because of these mines, people can no longer go freely in their fields, you know, to cultivate or to do their other occupation. As threats, we have mentioned also the two neighboring countries who are using the MFDC to obtain sometime what they want with Senegal, you know, because they know that that is a weak point for Senegal. So they are not always clear in their relations, you know, with Senegal and with the MFDC. These different activities are, of course, carried out in collision with local population also, some local population, but also with the established complicity of neighboring countries. We had, two tractors which were transporting woods, you know. Both those tractors came from Gambia, and we saw even the mention of Kanilai. Kanilai is the village where lives the president of Gambia. And during the interrogation, the conductor was saying that this tractor came from the farm of the president of Gambia. That is to say that you know, they have complicity of the neighboring countries. The MFDC insurgency is characterized by, at the political level, by an ideological independentist movement going backward, a war of leadership. In Biagi and Nkrumah, Sani. Support of neighboring countries also going backward. We see recently the initiative of the Gambian president, and with the liberation of soldiers who were captured by the rebels. Another point also is the decline of population support to the rebellion. That is a reality. At the operational level, we note a divided combatants branch. Divided different factions, so difficult to manage this situation. An internal leadership warfare, logistic shortages, and development of an economic base on illegal activities, as I showed earlier. Management of the conflict. The armed forces action. The armed forces, you know, they are there in Casamance and have permanent missions, operational missions, and conjunctural missions. The permanent missions, naturally, they have to ensure the defense of the integrity of Senegalese territory, and also to ensure to the population free movement. In the operational level, we have forces, you know, that are making control the zone, are controlling the zone, and to prevent the MFDC from making exaction over the population to avoid, you know, the free movement of vehicles and peoples, and also to assure the security of people and their properties. The army also is trying to support the peace process. The peace process by helping, you know, to maintain a minimum level of violence in the field, but also to follow, you know, the instruction when the politics, the executive, make a decision for ceasefire or to go to the peace. They are looking for peace. We have to take that the military into account, you know, in order not to endanger the peace process. The military are also making a lot of civil military actions in the field in order to help the people who are in difficulty because of the situation. You know, the military is assisting in different manner, the health branch, in the sometime by giving some assistance, some food, and something like that, in villages where there are difficulties. Now the peace initiatives. In 1990s, because I told earlier that 1990 was a turning point. In 1990, the MFDC began attacking military buildings in the region with covert support, first from our neighbor in the south, the army, you know, of this country. The Senegalese army, in turn, attacked MFDC bases in Bascazamas and in Guinea-Bissau also. We had to make a retaliation. Several ceasefires were agreed during the 1990s, but none lasted, unfortunately. Father Diamagoune had pursued a policy of talks and reconciliation. However, the Senegalese government could not consider independence for the region, leading some MFDC members to split and restart the fight. Another ceasefire was signed in 1997, but about hundreds of people were reported dead in battles up until March 2001, when Diamagoune and President Abdoulaye Wade agreed to a peace deal again. This peace deal allowed for release of prisoners, the return of refugees, and clearance of mines. But once again, the peace agreement will not last longer because some in the MFDC regarded this as a betrayal. And the movement is split with two factions battling each other. Since the split, low-level fighting has continued in the region. Another round of negotiation took place in 2005. Its results were, however, proved partial, and armed clashes between MFDC factions and the army continued in 2006, prompting thousands of civilians to flee across the border to the Gambia. Father Diamagoune died in January 2007. In October 2010, an illegal shipment of arms from Iran was seized in Lagos, Nigeria. The Senegalese government suspected that the arms were destined for the Casamance and recalled its ambassador in Tehran over the matter. Heavy fighting and recall occurred in December 2010, when about 100 MFDC members attempted to take Binyona south of the Gambian border, supported by heavy weapons for the first time, such as mortars and machine guns. They were repulsed with several casualties by Senegalese soldiers who suffered some deaths in the engagement. From December 2011, there is a recent development. And from December 2011 to March 2012, there was a new outbreak of violence with the rebel groups attacking weak military positions. On April 5th, newly sworn President Macky Sall said that ensuring peace in the south would be a top priority for his administration in his first public speech since taking office. He also expressed confidence that the leaders of Gambia and Guinea-Bissau can be involved in the efforts to find a solution to the long-running conflict. Now, what are the main concerns about Casamance? The main concerns, I can list some, are the cleaning up of mine-polluted roads, because a lot of roads, mainly in the north of Xinjiang, which is a part leading to the border with Gambia, a lot of roads are, the rebels are putting mines, and that is something that we have to deal with. So the cleaning up of mine, restoring roads, very often the army has to open some roads to allow again the population and the vehicle to move freely without danger. Another main concern is a division of the resistant movement, support of neighboring, and the support also of the neighboring countries of this movement. Because when they are divided, it is difficult to speak with one faction. Because if you try to speak with someone, another will not agree. We are concerned also by the drug trafficking, particularly in connection with Bissau, Guinea. I told earlier of the lootings, the stealing of cattle, you know, robbery in the roads, and attack of some shops. These are new ways of MFDC to gain money or to, you know, they attack some boutiques, they take all the goods or money and something like that. I will now conclude saying that heavy losses and wounded are recorded on both sides because of the conflict in Casamance. We have registered thousands of victims. Economic disintegration following the closing down of hotels because of the scarcity of tourists in the region and the interruption of many development projects. Disturbances of the educational system leading to closing down of schools in rural areas and unemployment increasing. Social disarray also. The notion of family has almost become meaningless. Population often are victims of violent robberies. The conflict is still a low intensity one in spite of the duration. There is no significant part of the territory under the insurgents' control. Local people and main actors of the conflict start to display tiredness. There are no more activities of the so-called Mr. Casamance because the time with the last regime, there were some people who were assigned to the region, were bringing money and something like that, and finally, we noticed that there were more troubles than solutions with these practices. So the new approach of the new president of Senegal allows hope for a quick return of peace in the region, and we have also some signs with the recent liberation of prisoners by the MFDC. But I should add also, before giving the floor, that Islamism is also threatening this region. And you can see, some of you have seen maybe on the television, the recent apparition of Salif Sadio, who is the chief of the radical movement, faction. His appearance was one of the Islamists. And more and more, we notice maybe some acquaintances with the rebellion. It is not something excluded. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what I had to say. And now I will be ready to answer to some questions.
Thank you very much, Colonel Kebe. Well, before we turn the floor over to questions, I'd like to turn the floor to Ambassador Bullington to Rebecca. To talk about the, I guess, the CSO's role in this. Thanks very much.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Rebecca Wall, and I work with the State Department's Conflict and Stabilization Operations Bureau. As you heard from the colonel, this conflict, it's long. It's 30 years. It's one of the longest running in Africa. It's messy, it's complicated, and it's nuanced. And when you look at conflicts like this, which stretch over extensive periods of time, you're going to see in that time period when there's moments for peace, and then when there's moments when you're further away from peace. And sometimes those things are within our control, and sometimes they're not in our control. And I think the important thing to point out for this particular conflict, and the colonel touched upon this, is that we are again entering a moment in time where peace is possible. And I think it's important to underscore just how much of a game changer the election of Macky Sall was in March of 2012. The colonel touched upon this a little bit, but since that time period, we've really seen a change in the government's approach to dealing with the conflict. We've also seen the rebels come forward and say that they're willing to negotiate. And as a result of this, we've identified, or the government and the rebels have identified, a mediator that they want to serve as the go-between between these groups, which is Sant'Egidio, a Catholic lay organization based in Rome, who has extensive history working with African conflicts. So this is very different than where we were a year ago. And in a refreshing show of harmony, I would also say that the international community has come together around this issue. And you're seeing NGOs and the international partners and the World Bank and UNDP saying, we believe that the moment in time is right now for the Casamance, and we really want to put pressure and resources and effort towards that. So it was within this moment of opportunity that CSO decided to start an engagement in the Casamance. What I want to do quickly is just touch upon how this engagement came about and why we think this is a U.S. government priority. Before I really go into the details of this particular engagement, I just want to highlight quickly that, as I noted, this was a 30-year conflict. And throughout time, there have been many other actors who have been working to bring an end to it. And if there is going to be any success in this particular initiative, it's only because of the work of folks who have been working on this for years and decades. And I think it's important just to highlight on the United States side as well that we've had several ambassadors who have really highlighted this issue. They've really worked towards bringing peace to the region. And in addition, USAID is well-renowned for the work that they are doing. Their peace-building work at the local level is very well-respected. So if this initiative is going to have any success, it's only because of the work of governments and NGOs and others who have been working there for decades now. Having said that, it's important to learn about this initiative to look back a year ago. And where we were a year ago in Senegal is very different from even where we are right now. As many of you recall, a year ago, Senegal was facing a bit of a crisis. It was unknown what was going to happen. You had the current president, President Wade, who was seeking a contentious third term in office. You had protests around the country. You had some violence resulting from that. And there were some concerns that Senegal was really headed in the wrong direction. And in the context of the Casamance, the former president, President Wade, he really centralized all decision-making in the presidency. And he effectively cut out the international community from engaging on this issue. So a year ago, the U.S. government really didn't have much of a window to work on the Casamance. And frankly, we didn't really have much of an interest to work on it because we didn't have room with the current administration. So it was in this very easy atmosphere that CSO deployed a team of about six of us to work on the elections. And just from a bureaucratic point, I think it's somewhat important to point out that our original mandate wasn't to look at the Casamance. It was to help to support the elections. But CSO Bureau, one of the things that we focus on is helping embassies assess conflict, helping embassies plan for conflict, and helping them respond to it. And so as we were assessing the conflicts that were occurring around the elections, we began to realize that there was going to be a real moment in time for engaging on the Casamance if there was going to be a change in government. And so we chatted with the embassy and said, if it seems to be clear that Macky Sall is going to win the second round of elections, there really could be a chance for the embassy to reengage. And we discussed, we cajoled, we convinced them to allow us to look at it further. And so myself and a colleague went to the region and just started talking to folks and trying to get a sense of what people in the Casamance felt about this change. And when we went down there, we really didn't know what we were going to hear. We thought that this was going to be a new window of opportunity, but when we started to speak with folks, I think it would be an understatement to say we were flabbergasted by how frequently the same responses were said again and again. And what we just kept hearing was, now is the moment in time. We think peace is possible now. We've been fighting for 30 years. We're tired of it. And we've heard the rebels say they're tired of it as well. And we really want to end this. perhaps more heartening from a U.S. bureaucratic standpoint, when we asked them specifically if the U.S. had a role to play in this, there was a unanimous response that, yes, not only should we or could we, but we should be. And we were really perceived as an honest broker who could help to help bring an end to this conflict. So given this new information, returned back to the U.S. and began speaking with the CSO Bureau about what we could really do to capitalize on this moment in time. And CSO not only helps to respond to conflicts, but we also have people and resources available to help work on the entire spectrum of how a conflict impacts a country. And so each engagement is different, but we really felt that for this particular instance, what we needed was having a high-level senior diplomat to shine a spotlight on the issue, to bring the U.S. government around it, to bring the international community around it, and just to really be the focal point within an embassy. For those of you who have worked with embassies or worked in an embassy, you know that, unfortunately, you don't necessarily always have the chance to put all of your efforts into one issue. And we thought that in this case, having that would make a huge difference. So, as you see sitting next to me is Ambassador Bullington. He'll go into a little bit more detail about the work that we're actually doing there, but I just have to say that this man was made for the job, and we're really fortunate to have found him, because really having that attention and having someone dedicated has made a huge difference. In addition to that, we also realized that we needed some quick funding so that we could respond to the conflict as it changed on the ground. So right now we're in the final process of reviewing a $1 million proposal to help support the negotiations and to help the confidence-building measures that are necessary for the people to see that peace is possible in the region. So before I hand it over to Jim, talk a little bit more about the more exciting elements of what we're doing, I just want to touch upon why we think this is a U.S. government priority. I'm very cognizant that the U.S. government can't work on every conflict around the world. We wouldn't be successful, first off, and it's really not in our interest to do so. But in this particular situation, there's three reasons why it's in the U.S. interest to work on the Casamance. The first reason, it's strictly humanitarian. We're in a situation where, with very little inputs from the United States government, with very little comparative effort, we can help to end the longest-running conflict in Africa. As our colonel said, this is a conflict that's taken thousands of lives, displaced tens of thousands of people, and really just held hostage a region of the country which should be the economic breadbasket and the touristic destination. So if the United States can help to end that with very little effort, then it should be our humanitarian imperative to do that. And the second reason, which I just touched upon, is economic. The United States government spends hundreds of millions of dollars helping Senegal develop its economy. If we were able to allow for the cultivation of land, allow for tourism to grow in the region, we wouldn't have to spend as much money as we do there every year. And finally, for folks who are paying attention to the news this weekend with Mali, you've seen that there's been a huge call for international partners to help support their efforts. And individuals who follow Senegal will know that they have one of the most professional and respected forces in the continent. And as long as Senegal is focused on its own internal conflicts, they're really unable to contribute to peacekeeping engagements. So helping them to alleviate this conflict is going to make a huge difference in our ability to impact regional stability. So in closing, I just want to say that, as I noted, the United States can't work on every conflict. But I'm happy that the Conflict and Stabilization Operations Bureau exists, because what it does is it allows us to identify when a particular conflict has reached a point in time when limited inputs from the United States can make a difference. And I'm not 100% positive that we're going to be successful in this engagement. There's been peace engagements in the past, and they've not succeeded. But I am confident that right now the United States is doing everything it can to seize on this moment in time. So having said that, I'll turn it over to the ambassador to speak a little bit more about what exactly we're doing on the ground.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Bullington.
Good morning. It's really a pleasure for me to be resurrected from retirement, to have this opportunity to work on an exciting issue where there's some chance of making real impact. I want to stress to begin with the extraordinary welcome I received when I got to Dakar on October 1st, first arriving there. The warmth and the depth of the reception I received was truly marvelous from President Saul and some of the senior ministers I met with to the heads of some of the civic organizations in the Casamance when we visited there, to the chambermaids in my hotel who saw my card, Casamance advisor, and got to talking to my wife about what was I doing there. And they came up and said, oh, this is so important, and we're so grateful that you're here, and we really appreciate it. Well, I'm old enough and ugly enough to know that that has nothing to do with me as an individual. It has everything to do with the fact that the United States government cared enough to send a senior person, a retired ambassador, to Dakar to work exclusively on trying to help resolve the Casamance conflict. My presence is evidence of this U.S. engagement and U.S. support. As Secretary Clinton remarked a few months ago, a great deal of diplomacy is about just being there. Just being there. Well, being there here in this instance is indeed very important. And we are there. We are there to support Senegal, and they recognize that and are genuinely very grateful for it. In reflecting on this and trying to explain it to myself and others, I sort of came up with an analogy. Let's say someone is interested in starting an important new venture. And, of course, they talk about the venture. Let's say it's making widgets. And they talk about it to their family and their friends, and people nod and say, yes, that's nice, and we're really glad to see you do this, and we approve of it, and we support you, and good luck. But then comes rich Uncle Sam, who's not just approving, but is enthusiastic about what this widget project might mean, and says, I support it. Not only do I support it verbally, though, but there's this retired senior executive in one of my companies that knows a lot about widgets and has some experience, and I'm going to send him over to you to work with you and see how he can be helpful and how our organization can be helpful in advancing your project. And not only that, I'm even willing to buy a few shares of stock in your widget company when you have your IPO. Now, this has a profound effect. It goes well beyond words in encouraging this entrepreneur to go ahead and push ahead with the project in spite of obstacles and to give it the high priority that it deserves. It not only encourages the entrepreneur, it encourages the friends and the family around them to say, well, if Uncle Sam is interested in this, maybe we should be as well. Maybe there are things that we can do to help out too. But if the first step is just being there, just being visibly engaged in support of the peace initiative, the second step was determining how best we really can provide some support in a practical sense. Borrowing from the name of the Bureau, I think there are two tracks. One is the conflict resolution track that involves negotiations and political influence and that sort of thing. The other is the stabilization track. Conflict resolution, that's sensitive, it's difficult, and there's a limited amount that we or any outsider can do. We can't solve the conflict in the Casamance. We can't bring peace. Only the Senegalese can do that. What then can we do? We can support the peacemakers. We can support the peacemakers. And as Rebecca mentioned, the mediator has been identified by the government and the rebels as San Egidio. So Neil Kringle and I, he's from CSO, from the Bureau, went to Rome to meet with San Egidio and discovered that indeed they are very professional, they are very experienced, very competent, But they need some resources. They're a private lay organization, and they could really use some help. So we're in the process of beginning to provide them some financial resources to make sure that they have the means necessary to do everything in their power to carry out their role as an effective mediator. Another thing we can do in this regard is to try to use our political influence. As Colonel Kebe said, the neighboring countries are very important actors in this conflict. I think right now, the Gambia is by far the most important of those neighboring actors. So I went to Banjul and spent about a week there conveying the message that the United States government really puts a high priority on this effort to bring peace to the Casamance, and we really would appreciate it if you would cooperate in this effort. And we wanted to get that message across to the government of the Gambia, and I hope we did. On the stabilization track, this is how we aim to assure a durable peace, not just an agreement, but something that's durable, something that's lasting, and address some of the root causes of the Casamance conflict. This includes DDR, disarmament, demobilization, and reinsertion of ex-combatants, and a lot of demining activities, resettlement of refugees and displaced persons, and economic development projects, all of these sorts of things. Well, first, as Rebecca said, I want to be, and I think I have achieved that point, that I'm the focal point in the U.S. mission for an interagency effort, and there are several agencies involved, USAID and Agriculture and Defense Department and others, to be the focal point so that everybody keeps focused on this Casamance conflict as our priority, and that we try to accelerate and augment our stabilization kinds of activities there in the Casamance. Also, I'm the focal point in the sense of relationships on the Casamance, and that's all I do, on the Casamance with the Senegal government and with the other donor community, the other international actors involved. So I've met with those donors on a continuing basis, and I found them very, very receptive to this idea of we are accelerating and augmenting our activities, and what can you do also to contribute to this? They were very positive in their reception, not because I was so persuasive, but because they had analyzed the situation and come to the same conclusions that we had, that indeed there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity now that will last for a few months. It may not last too much longer than that, but now is the time that we should all come together and support this effort to end the Casamance conflict. As a consequence of this, there's a real surge that's beginning this month in not just our stabilization kinds of projects, demining and road building and the like, but in the whole international community. The UNDP is very active in this, the World Bank, several bilateral donors as well. So beginning this month and hopefully continuing throughout this year, there's going to be this surge in activity. I want to mention especially the Gambia Bridge Project. I wish we had a map because it makes it so dramatic how the Gambia sticks like a finger right into the heart of Senegal and serves to geographically isolate the Casamance from the rest of the country. That is compounded because the Gambia runs along the course of a fairly large river over which there are no bridges. And this makes it very difficult for folks in the Casamance economically to connect with Dakar and the populous region of Senegal. what is the root cause of this conflict? The conflict is not ideological. It's not ethnic. It's not religious. What is it? At root, I believe, it's a case of the geographic isolation of the Casamance caused by the Gambia and its separation and the lack of communications across this river. That has led to an economic isolation, a political isolation, a kind of psychological isolation even. That people in Casamance say, well, we're going, when they go to Dakar, we're going to Senegal. It's a different kind of problem there. That really lies at the root of the Casamance conflict more than any other single thing. And if that bridge project could get launched, it is the one project that would do more than any other single thing we could do to alleviate that root cause of the conflict. It's not a problem of financing. The financing has been available for a long time. The project has been under discussion for more than 20 years, but it has been repeatedly delayed for essentially political reasons by the Gambia. And they have not agreed to it for various reasons, which frankly are hard to understand, but they haven't for a long, long time. But now it is once again on track, and they have agreed that it can proceed. The financing is there from the African Development Bank. The bid, appel d'offre, the call for bids is about to go out. And hopefully, if it's not derailed, the project can proceed this year, that construction dirt will actually turn before the end of this year. So one of the things I've been working on is to try to keep that project on track, because it is so key to the root cause and also to the psychology of the issue. Progress has been made. Negotiations have begun in Rome under the auspices of San Egidio between the government and the most militant and probably most important of the rebel factions. There are also some discussions ongoing between the government and other factions. At first, we thought, and I think most people analyzing the conflict thought, that somehow we have to bring the rebels together so that there would be a single interlocutor for the government. And indeed, that would be nice. That would make it a lot easier. But as we got into it, San Egidio, I think, and others have discovered that the rebels' factions hate each other more than they hate the government. And bringing them together is a harder task than working with them separately. So right now, anyway, that basically is what's going on. And we seem to be making some progress in that. Very important, too, recently was the release on December 9th of some Senegal army prisoners that had been held by one of the factions for over a year. They were released thanks to some negotiations by San Egidio and with the cooperation of the Gambia, which was really important. There are indications now that President Jammeh, who has a history of supporting the rebels in various ways over many years, has seen the wisdom now of cooperating in the peace initiative, and he says he is going to cooperate, and there are some indications that maybe this time it's real. And most importantly, perhaps, over the past 4 or 5 months, there has emerged a sort of de facto ceasefire in the Casamance. There have been no attacks by the rebels. The Senegalese army is not conducting active offensive operations, but is concentrating on civic action and other things that the colonel mentioned. So right now, there's a de facto ceasefire. It's not proclaimed. It's not talked about. But there have simply been no attacks. It's sort of the dog that didn't bark. It's not peace, but right now there is not military fighting going on. But there are lots of continuing challenges. One, of course, is maintaining that de facto ceasefire. We also hope to see some confidence-building measures of various sorts implemented as we go forward to increase the momentum of the negotiations They're there, but they're moving very slowly, and there are difficulties in them. Also, this deep division among the rebel factions really complicates the question and makes it difficult to proceed with negotiations, but that seems to be the way we'll have to go. It appears that we may be nearing the point where we will have to address DDR, the disarmament, demobilization, and reinsertion of some ex-combatants. It's hoped that in a matter of not too much time, that we will begin to see some of the rebel combatants beginning to lay down their arms. And the government recognizes that it needs to make sure that the reception that they receive and the treatment they receive, the DDR process, is effective and is satisfactory, because that will encourage the other groups to come in if it works well with the first ones who come in. And conversely, if it is not successful, if it fails, that could be a problem in inducing other people to continue coming in. So that's very important that we be prepared, we, the government, the people who are supporting it, be prepared to implement an effective DDR project. The government is working on that, and we're looking at ways that we can help them as part of our project there. It's also going to be important to maintain this surge in the stabilization kinds of projects, the demining and resettlement and those sorts of things, the economic development projects that are necessary to make the peace durable if we can achieve one. The conclusion I've reached, I think, is that there are really solid grounds for optimism that peace is achievable in the Casamance. I hope achievable this year in 2013, before too much longer. But at the same time, that optimism has to be tempered with a lot of caution, because the 30-year history of this conflict has been littered with failed agreements and disappointed hopes. And it's not because, I'm sure, these people weren't sincere and weren't really trying. So we have to be very cautious. But nonetheless, I think there are grounds for optimism. Finally, I might just say a word about this model of United States support for ending a conflict. And we can talk more about it if you want to in the Q&A. But I see this as sort of a diplomatic SWAT team model of expeditionary diplomacy. Why that? How is it a model? Well, it's tightly focused on one clear objective, peace in the Casamance. It's limited in scope and limited in time. And it is a very, very low-cost operation for potentially a really important payoff, not just for Casamance and for Senegal, but for our interest. If it succeeds, the payoff is high at tiny, tiny cost for the U.S. government. It requires not a lot of people, not a lot of commodities, not a lot of money. Some money, but not a lot. What it really requires is high-level diplomatic engagement and participation and leadership. And we're going to try to continue offering that and hope that that we succeed in the Casamance. Thank you. Now we can go on to questions.
Thank you very much. I'd like to ask, please raise your hand if you have a question. Approach a microphone. Please identify yourself. Keep your question fairly short and focused so that we can get as many questions in as possible. And then turn your microphone off after, please. The microphone, please. Oh, there you go. Thanks. Thank you.
Well, I'd say the election of President Saul, I don't know why he made that decision, Dane, but he did, and I'm glad he did, and it's a dramatic decision from a change from when you were there and up until the election last March. The change is really dramatic because that created the conditions under which our help was wanted and we could provide it. Why? Well, maybe because everything else had failed. The Mr. Casamance approach failed. The purely military approach failed. And so after 30 years, maybe it was just time to try something else. But whatever the motivation is, it is very genuine. The willingness to seek international assistance and participation in helping solve this problem. And I'm glad it's there because it gives us an opportunity to do what we had wanted to do for a long time, to try to help out, and now we are. Maybe Colonel Kebby has some thoughts about this.
Well, something I might just add, too, is I think that it wasn't lost on the Senegalese government how much support the United States put to keeping Senegal on the right democratic track. And so the United States came out pretty strongly to say that if there were actions that President Wade were taking that were crossing the line of what was considered appropriate within a democracy, that maybe that they should take a relook at that. So I think because we were such a good partner during that process, it also opened the doorway for us to work with Macky Sall after the elections.
It is a political question, but I suppose that the problem has always been dealt with internally because it is a low-intensity conflict. And as I said earlier, the rebellion has no territory gain, and maybe that's why. But we have a lot of dead, a lot of problems, so I think that's not a bad thing if initiative like the American initiative can help to find a solution for a definitive peace in Casamance and in Senegal.
My name is Chris Hedrick. I've been the Peace Corps country director in Senegal since 2007. We have 260 volunteers spread around the country, but none in the Casamance because of the historical security situation. We're planning this year to return to the Casamance, beginning with volunteers in the city of Ziguinchor, where we perceive the security situation to be the most stable and the transportation to be the most stable. What I'd like to know is, what steps do you see being taken over the next year or two to provide additional security should the peace process continue to move forward, particularly in demining and in ensuring the security of transportation corridors? That's, for me, the barrier in moving from a couple of symbolic volunteers, which I think are important from a symbolic point of view because the Peace Corps has been involved in the Casamance for decades, for 50 years. To having dozens of volunteers working in communities across the Casamance playing a meaningful, practical role in grassroots economic development.
For the security matters, you know, the army is there to ensure security for the population, but I think that for foreign people, you know, we cannot, the army maybe cannot ensure the security of everybody. If you remember, there was some French people who were captured and they are dead, I think. They were captured in Casamance in the 1990s. Yeah. But I think this will be possible if really the peace process is a peace comeback. I mean, and maybe with the initiative also, with the talk of the rebellions, if they accept the role of the United States, because that is very important also, this acceptance, and I think that United States has already that, that will be easy. They can go back and without problem.
And demining?
Yeah, for the demining process, you know, we are trying in the army to find some materials for the demining, for the axes and rods, because that is our problem. It is very expensive. I think we are trying to make a prospect in order to find some machine for that. The engineer in the army is doing a lot. We have also civilian organization for the demining process. But I think the military, that is a problem. Because we think that it is better than the military take care of this demining. Because they will go everywhere. Why is this association, civilian association, maybe sometime they come, they say, okay, we are in this village, we have make the pollution, all is okay, but in reality they want also, they do that, but in reality that is not effective. And maybe the military are more, can be more concrete, you know, and if they are helped with some means, to make the depollution by the engineer, I think things will go forward.
Now, let me comment just a bit. I'm delighted that we're getting just a couple back in Ziguinchor. As Chris knows, after I retired from the Foreign Service, I became Peace Corps director for 6 years in Niamey, Niger. So Peace Corps is close to my heart, and I really... I'm delighted that we have that prospect of getting them back. Security in general, I think it will be a process that will take some time to bring real security throughout the region. A lot of the activity that's going on now is awfully hard to define as political or just outright banditry. The two have kind of merged, and so it's a little bit difficult to say we're going to control crime and keep that from happening. On demining specifically, I'm glad you mentioned the military role in that, Colonel, because one of the things the President mentioned was that we could do to help, we the United States, was to help with some demining training and equipment. And I'm glad to say we were able to respond to that very quickly. The Defense Department has, and we formally offered to set up a demining training program for the Senegalese Army with the instructors and the equipment and so forth, because there are so many mines there that this is going to be a long-term project. We're also working with Handicap International and some other organizations, civilian organizations, and the government's CANAMS, they call it the Center for Demining Activity, to support some demining programs along the roads. Two of the big projects the United States is involved in, one financed by MCC and one by the Agriculture Department, building a big trunk road that runs sort of parallel to the river east and west and Route 6 in the Casamance. And the Agriculture Department is doing a bunch of feeder roads for that. They need some help in demining, and one of the things that we CSO are trying to get going, be a catalytic support to initiate the demining necessary so that those road projects can move forward. And this military training center can also be used by the civilians, by CANAMS, as well to train demining folks to continue long after we are gone, because it will be a multi-year project. So we're working hard on it, but it's not going to be too quick. But at least I think we can have volunteers in Ziguinchor and maybe gradually expand into other areas.
You know, it's never too early to start planning for post-conflict reconstruction. And two of the major challenges that you see throughout the world in conflicts, it's so difficult to get to peace that so much energy is focused on getting there that a lot of times the post-peace agreement is difficult. And two of the big issues tend to be policing and DDR. Policing, it's often very difficult to find the resources or political will to get the state to protect the people in the former conflict zone against predatory behavior. And a lot of DDR programs end up being DD programs because the actual reinsertion, reintegration of combatants is not something that a lot of governments have a great deal of incentive or desire. So you've been fighting with these people for so many years that, okay, they put down their weapons, now why should I help them, is the attitude that you often get from states. And as a consequence, you get the first round of people laying down their arms and they demobilize, and then they're waiting for the jobs and the training that never come. And then so you don't get the knock-on effect that you would have from further rounds of DDR. Could I ask what the status of post-conflict planning is? And perhaps could you also speak to the political will aspect of it?
I think as far as the military is concerned, DDR is a very important thing, but there was in 2004, after the peace agreement, it was decided to let the rebels, the MFDC combatants, to give them a portion of terrain in which they will essay in order, for the DDR. But there was a problem because they was there, but the armaments were kept. They kept their own armaments, and they were doing culture during the period of drugs and something like that. So I think that is a very, very sensitive issue, how to demobilize the different factions to see that effectively they accept to depose their weapons and also to find something. I think what is important is to find something for these young people, because most of them are young, to have something else to do. And I think agriculture will be also something very important for them. If people has the means to work I think what is not good is to integrate people in the army as we saw it in other countries, saying, okay, that is the end of the conflict, we take all the rebels, come join the army, and we will confidence that will never work. Because a rebel is a civilian who uses arms, who has no training, who has no professionalism. And when an army accepts that, he will no longer be a professional army. So the solution would be to find something for those demobilized people to do, to go for working on the farm, or some other project, civilian project.
I can say that the government is aware of this problem and is giving it a high priority. We are trying to help it. We CSO in the initial phases, at least. And I think there are others who will be helping, particularly UNDP, has the resources and the intent to try to move in. And they have a survey team going out there this month to start looking at how they can get more directly involved in this. So I hope that indeed the DDR will have the kind of attention it needs.
I think I'll take two final questions.
I'm Sada Flakani from the World Bank Social Cohesion and Violence Prevention Team. And I just wanted to add, Robert, another issue to those two priority issues that you identified, policing and the DDR, and one which tends to fall off the agenda quite often, and that is that of the displaced population, as we know that there are a significant number of IDPs and refugees in neighboring countries and within urban centers in particular, in Casamance. And we currently have a team out there looking at how the World Bank can contribute to addressing this issue. But I'd love to hear from both the government and from the U.S. as to what they think they can find in terms of durable solutions for displacement.
Okay. And back there. That's me.
There indeed are a lot of refugees in other countries as well as IDPs. And it's going to be part of a process. Demining is a big part of it, to clear those lands so that they can go back. The land is there, and it's rich, and there are potential for the returnees to come, and also the ex-combatants to take up agriculture. But we have to demine it, secure it, and get the roads built that will enable it to be economically viable and so forth. These projects are proceeding. We have a refugee specialist in the embassy now who I hope is working with your people there to see what kinds of projects we can contribute to. And the international community is aware of that problem and will be working on it, I hope.
Some example in the past, to encourage the refugees to come back, first of all, the peace should be effective. Once the peace is effective, the demining, I said, Ambassador Bulkington, is very important because they are farmers and they have to go to the fields and they should have security, you know, to go and do what they have to do. Most of time, they lost their houses, and the government made in the past some effort to help reconstruction, to help them to reconstruct, you know, the houses, but also the schools. At the beginning, to give some food and something like that, in order for them to be sure to come with confidence.
And a final question, please, sir.
Thank you. My name is Guy. I'm the vice president of...
And, sir, I believe you had a question as well.
Yeah, I have a question.
Microphone, please.
I will
identify first, yourself.
I'm the representative of ARESCA, whose Association of Native of Casamance is a non-profit organization. We have more than 200 people here, Casamance's people. And Mr. Ba comes from Senegal. He's also working in that project, how we can together bring the peace in Casamance. What I want to say, first of all, is...
If you could just pose a question, because we're almost out of time. Thanks.
The question is, how Mr. Guy say, how can we bring Casamance's people that are in United States to participate in resolving that problem, which the U.S. government, who's doing a wonderful job since President Macky Sall takes the power.
I'm delighted to see the representatives from the Casamance here in the diaspora. It's very important to have your support. One of the things, as I was saying, Secretary Clinton commented about the importance of just being there. It's important that people know that you are here, that you are supporting it, and the kinds of publicity you might be able to bring to the importance of the Casamance, not just for Senegal and for the people there, but also for the entire region. Keeping the external world focused on that would be a very important contribution that you could make. And as we proceed with the peace process, hopefully it succeeds, then there will be an increasing role for people in the diaspora to do some practical work there, I think, in returning, investing. It's a rich area, potentially rich area, a tourist magnet. There are lots of things that you can do to promote the economic development and growth of the Casamance into the kind of region that it should be, the breadbasket, the foreign exchange earner through tourism and so forth. And I think there will be a big role for the diaspora as that moves forward. And I hope you can get that started as soon as you can.
Colonel Kebe, any final thoughts, sir? Okay. Ms. Wall? Great. I'd like to thank all of our guests for coming here, for speaking today about this important issue. We all look forward to the good news coming out through the media over the next few months. We'll all be keeping close track of this situation as it develops over the next year. Thank all of you for coming today.
Yeah.